My beloved, there is more joy somewhere, and I'd venture to say it's right here. At times it feels like we're in the middle of a bad dream, doesn't it? When the news each day has us reeling, afraid of the consequences and harm caused to millions of people around the world, and watching our beautiful planet and our country being dismantled. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem that we're going to be waking up from this bad dream for a little while, at least for right now. So many of us have been feeling overwhelmed and hopeless and powerless. And many of you have shared feeling that way with me, and I too wonder how all of this will unfold as I become aware of the latest act of destruction and harm to so many innocent people. But, my friends, crawling into a hole, getting depressed, and letting the bad news overwhelm us would be submitting to the playbook of oppressors and how they want us to feel, right? Yes. There's still so much good that exists in the world, so much beauty, joy, that continues to exist all around and within us. So I want to take a moment today to remember the many civilizations, communities, and people who have resisted difficult times with joy. With joy, you might ask. How is that possible? And I'm going to insist, yes, with joy, because joy is a feeling we can generate. It's an experience we can create almost no matter what is happening around us. And this isn't about toxic positivity or ignoring suffering, but it's about acknowledging our full humanity, which includes our capacity for delight, wonder, creativity, and joy, even amidst struggle. And in fact, often joy is the exact antidote that we need to all the suffering around us. As I say in our joys and sorrows each week, we need joy to counterbalance the difficult stuff, or we could be overwhelmed by the struggle. Yesterday, I had the great fortune of seeing a play about Rachmaninoff and the Tsar. And Rachmaninoff had a tragic life, losing both his sisters and then his parents as a child. Yet it was his composing and playing music that saved him. It helped him find joy and purpose in the midst of very difficult times, which reminded me that the arts are one of the primary ways we can experience and express joy and our emotions during difficult times. Who here participates in the arts in some kind of way? That's a lot of us. Anyone here familiar with a Brazilian carnival that happens every Lent throughout Brazil? I always thought it was just a joyful, colorful celebration like a giant street party, but it turns out that its origins actually lie in resistance to dictatorships and oppressors. Carnival in Brazil has its roots in the colonial era, when Portuguese brought Catholic traditions to the region in the 17th century. But as more enslaved Africans were brought to Brazil, they brought with them the rich traditions of drumming, dance, and music. And over time, their traditions melded with Portuguese, indigenous, and other European influences to form this unique carnival culture. And today, Brazil's carnival is more than just a festival. It's a powerful symbol of how joy, culture, and community can act together as a form of resistance. And it allows the people of Brazil to affirm their humanity, to celebrate their glorious diversity, and use joy as a powerful tool for defiance and social change. It's a symbol of collective resilience, joy, and resistance, which was used very intentionally during Brazil's military dictatorship from 1964 until 1985. And during that time, the government sought to control public expression, to suppress dissent, and curb the spread of political opposition. But carnival, together with many samba schools, which is a unique Brazilian dance form, if you're not familiar with it, incorporated political themes into their parades, often using metaphor, allegory, and satire to comment on the political and social issues of the day. Songs that had double meanings, celebrating Brazilian culture while also subtly criticizing the government, became a form of non-violent protest. And I emphasize here, song is a glorious form of non-violent protest. Extravagant joy in the midst of repression became a powerful form of resistance. And of course, this is similar to what happened during our civil rights era in this country in the 1960s. In 1961, Bernice Johnson Reagan was a student at Albany State College in Georgia when she joined her first civil rights demonstration. Police arrested her and dozens of other young protesters, loading them into police cars and later jail cells. Later, in a 1994 interview, Reagan described what happened as she was carted off to jail. "I opened my mouth," she said, "and I began to sing, 'Over my head, I see freedom in the air.' And everybody in the police van joined in the singing, and the song was transformed from a message of solace to one of hope and a freedom song." And she later founded the Freedom Singers, and then in the 1970s, the famous a cappella group Sweet Honey in the Rock. And she realized the power of collective singing to unify people, to strengthen their courage, and to elevate their spirits. And of course, during the most dangerous moments of the civil rights movement, and many of you were there, marching and singing, singing became a tactical weapon. Songs like "We Shall Overcome" and "This Little Light of Mine," which we sang last week, and "Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around," and "I'm On My Way to the Freedom Land," which we sang earlier. These all became songs that expressed determination, solidarity, and yes, joy, even in the face of oppression. And when protesters faced violence from police or white mobs, they would join hands and sing. And the singing steadied their nerves and affirmed their solidarity and often confused and disarmed the opponents. And then Fannie Lou Hamer, who was a sharecropper turned courageous civil rights leader, would lead "This Little Light of Mine" even after being brutally beaten in a Mississippi jail. She said, "I guess if I'd had any sense, I'd be scared. But what was the point of being scared? The only thing they could do was kill me, and it seemed like they'd already been trying to do that a little bit at a time ever since I could remember." So the joy in these songs wasn't naive happiness. It was defiant joy, a declaration that oppression could not crush their spirit or their vision for a better future for all. It was resistance embodied in melody and harmony. Another form of joyful resistance was modeled by Tibetan Buddhists during the Chinese occupation. When the Chinese invaded Tibet in 1950, over 6,000 monasteries were destroyed, and thousands of monks and nuns were killed or imprisoned, and religious texts were burned. The Dalai Lama himself fled into exile in 1959 following a failed uprising. But despite this, practitioners continued their meditation practice focused on compassion for everyone, even their oppressors, and joy. And the Dalai Lama's ongoing emphasis on humor and laughter represents resistance against the bitterness that oppression might otherwise cause. Some of you may have read his recent book with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, The Book of Joy. Anyone here read it? It's a glorious book. It's in our library, and I highly recommend it. And it demonstrates his determination to express joy no matter what. Despite witnessing the destruction of his homeland and living in exile for over six decades, he maintains a practice of joyfulness that confounds observers. When asked how he preserves his characteristic laughter and his good humor, he explains, "I've lost my country and live as a refugee. I'm a human being with emotions and feelings. I experience sadness, anxiety and pain like everyone else. But worry and anxiety help nothing. Instead, I try to transform that energy into hope, joy, and determination. I know that's a lesson for me to learn and something I aspire to. And in public appearances, he often breaks into spontaneous laughter. He holds hands with those he meets, and he generally exudes warmth, not as a performance, but as an embodied practice. And when meeting with world leaders, his genuine delight in human connection often disrupts diplomatic formality. Now again, my friends, this isn't naive positivity. It's an intentional practice to turn towards joy. Yes! And our baby solstice reminds us of that.
I think that was
amazing. The Dalai Lama speaks frankly about suffering and injustice while refusing to let suffering define the Tibetan identity. And the simultaneous recognition of suffering and cultivation of joy represents spiritual resistance against forces that would prefer Tibetans internalize despair. And in fact, as monasteries were demolished, Tibetans created hidden networks to maintain their practices, just as Unitarians did in Transylvania in the 1600s. Families would take turns hosting secret gatherings where meditation practices continued. And one remarkable practice was the Tonglen meditation that some of you know, which paradoxically focuses on taking in others' suffering and transforming it and sending out joy and compassion. So even while experiencing oppression, practitioners cultivated joy to share with all beings, including, remarkably, the Chinese soldiers and officials. Now, outside Tibet, the diaspora community preserves traditions through colorful religious festivals involving elaborate costumes, music, and dance. And these celebrations aren't just cultural preservation, they're actual declarations that Tibetan culture remains vibrantly alive despite attempts to destroy it. So the joy expressed in these gatherings is both spiritual practice and political statement. So, my friends, these examples show joy as a deliberate practice precisely because of difficult circumstances. And the more challenging the situation, the more important the cultivation of compassion and joy becomes, not as an escape, but as profound resistance against forces that would diminish human dignity and spirit. Dancing, singing, and creating art of any kind, as well as humor, play, and meditation are some of the approaches to expressing and practicing joy as a form of resistance. And others might find joy in acts of protest, service, or tangible actions that make a difference, or being out in nature and planting a garden. My friends, I invite you to do whatever brings you joy and never let go of that. It's revolutionary to feel joy despite hardship. So I'm curious, what do you do to lift your spirits when times are tough? We're running kind of late. I was going to give you an opportunity to share with a neighbor, but maybe just call out a few things that you do to cultivate joy within you. You might be something like hearing birdsong during a time of grief, or laughing with a friend during time of illness, or finding beauty in nature. What momentary joy do you practice as a form of resistance? Anyone want to raise their hand and I'll repeat it? Yes, Marcy.
Singing
and gardening, yes. Watching comedy shows, yes. Dancing, yes.
Come to Chalice.
Yes, Torkel.
Dancing,
we know you love to dance. Yes. Best of late night in the New York Times. Yes. Ruth Ann.
Walking Peppertree Park.
Yes. Yes, Ayana. Playing games. Yes, Thelma.
Going to the beach.
Going to the beach. Yes. Anyone else? The baby. Being around babies and listening to babies. My friends, these moments of joy aren't separate from our lives or our justice work. They actually fuel it. When we taste joy, even in difficult times, we're experiencing firsthand the world that we are fighting for. A world of beauty, a world of kindness, a world of love for everyone, a world of joy. Joy reminds us of what we're protecting and creating together. So I invite you to keep telling the truth of your experience. Find joy in as many places as you can. Do what's meaningful for you. And let's share fun, laughter, and joy doing it together. Are you up for it?
Yes.
May it be so, my friends.
And some food.
That's right. We're going to have joyous celebration after this together with food. So please join us now as you feel moved to sing an extraordinary song reminding us that no one can take away our joy. You can dance, sit, stand, whatever feels appropriate to you as we sing this song together.